What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that came out this week, and we review them. And lots of big stuff coming out, so why don't we kick it off with the biggest monster of them all, Godzilla, number one from IDW, written by Tim Seeley.
What is Pete?
Come on!
Is Pete doing this? Why is Godzilla climbing up to the top of the stack? I've seen enough of this monster.
Well, never. I'll tell you what. This has art by Nicolas Esmeja. We had Tim Seeley on the show to talk about this because this is the kickoff to the Kaisei era, which is a new cohesive mythology around Godzilla.
Yeah,
it's going to spin off into two other titles, potentially more to come. But the big deal here is we're getting Godzilla released and was sort of awakened by this Kaisei energy. Years later, there are G-Force, which are like a combo of the Ultimates and G.I. Joe and a bunch of other things trying to take down Godzilla and other kaijus, and enter a kid who may have the power to take down Godzilla single-handed. We talked about this on the live show a bit, but what'd you guys think about it now that it's out in the world?
This is great. First off, really fun cover. Normally I don't like to read the human parts, but what Tim Seeley did here is he made it.
Wait, so what are you reading? What are you reading normally? Godzilla rarely speaks.
I don't want to get into this too much because this makes me so mad. And Pete and I have talked about this several times because Pete, for example, with a Godzilla movie, won't watch the movie. He watch a highlights reel where he fast forwards to the monster fights.
Yep.
So he's never actually seen a Godzilla movie.
That's not true.
You have not. Have you watched one front to back from the beginning to the end without fast forwarding?
Nope.
Right. So you've never watched a Godzilla movie.
So you're not
actually a Godzilla fan because the filmmakers and actors put a lot of hard work into these things.
Dare you say that?
One of us is wearing a t-shirt.
Oh, great.
I'm also wearing a t-shirt. I'm a big fan of the color blue.
Well, but congratulations.
Pete, how would you feel if someone looked at you, Pete, and they only saw the t-shirt and didn't see the human underneath?
You know? Well, hey, you know, you got to meet people where they are. You know what I mean? And so what Tim Seeley did is he heard that criticism and said, you know what? I'm going to make the people's stuff so good you have to read it. And he got me. And, I like this idea, this interesting kind of thing of like, because Godzilla usually doesn't care about humans. He'll step on them and that kind of stuff. I mean, there's certain humans he does care about. But it was crazy to see. Like, he stopped in his tracks, attacked this one guy, and this guy has kaiju power. So this is a very interesting idea, something new in the Godzilla world. You know, we usually just get Mothra and all sorts of stuff, but this is kind of an interesting take where the humans have, kaiju powers maybe. So this is
exciting. You like it because he's like a little Godzilla.
That's right. Yeah.
Godzuki, as it were.
Yeah. Before we move on to your thoughts, Justin, can I mention the insane opposite problem that Pete has? He told me he watched Wicked, but fast-forwarded through the musical numbers.
This isn't just a shitting on Pete.
No, I feel like it's a related problem. The fact that you're fast-forwarding through Godzilla movies and just watching the monster fights means, and then watching
the non-musical scenes of a musical is insane behavior. What do you like? Yeah. Just like chatting? And then they're like, and then you cut.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a fan of the libretto.
Well, here we go. So, interesting thing. We talk about K-pop Demon Hunters. I tried to fast forward through the songs, but by the end, it won me over, and I ended up watching the whole thing.
Wow, what a real triumph of art. What did you think of this book, Justin?
I mean, I have the opposite take on Godzilla from Pete. To me, Godzilla is mostly a mountain that occasionally turns its top to shoot fire out of it. It's like a volcano. It's a directional volcano is what Godzilla is. So I don't find that super interesting. What I liked about this is the characters are really engaging, really fun. I like that it's taking Godzilla and making actual story around it that feels germane to it without being like a forced twist. I mean, Tim Seeley's so good at doing that. He's a great writer who's been writing everything for the last decade in comics. So, and cares deeply about the stories he's telling. And this, you can see that in what he's doing here. He's setting up a team of characters that are already, you can see the seeds of how they're not going to get along being planted now. And that's really exciting for this book.
Yeah, it feels completely fresh and new. I was a little dubious about it before we got into it, even knowing the creative team, just because it felt like, oh, we did it with the Energon universe, the Absolute universe, and Ultimate universe. Yeah, yeah, we're just going to do that with Godzilla as well. But this really does feel like a fresh and different take on Godzilla that still makes sense if you are a fan of the property previously, which Pete is not. Really love the art in here throughout. Great book. Excited to read more. Superman number 28 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Dan Mora. This is a big kickoff to the next leg of DC's all-in story, as Superman is attacked by the Legion of Darkseid, and we get an even bigger twist by the end of this issue. I should put blanket spoiler warning for everything that we're going to talk about here in the stack, but we've talked about this incessantly. Joshua Williamson knows exactly what he's doing writing Superman. Dan Mora draws, I believe, every book that is being put out, every single comic, and I don't know how he does it. But I thought there were some really fun twists and turns in here that I was not expecting.
Definitely. First off, let me say blanket spoiler. It's a comforter. We should always be willing to say that. Pete has an Afghan on his lap, as always, as a Pennsylvania country.
Real quick, what's your blanket spoiler? My blanket spoiler is putting a pillow under the blanket so it gives like a little extra comfort where I can put my hands.
Oh, you got pillows all around you when you sleep? Yeah. Like a little prince?
What the fuck are you talking about? You
make your blanket spoiler, Pete? What's your blanket
You make a little
spoiler?
Pillow coffin to sleep in, you little vampire?
Pretty much.
Oh, my God.
Pete sleeps in a pile of clean laundry, is my
thing. That's right. That's the best thing when it's warm.
Somewhat clean. I've been roasted for, it's like when you do laundry and then you dump it on your bed and then you don't fold it and then you're like, I'm tired, and then you sleep on it. I got roasted about that for a very long time in my life. And now I'm a big old grown-up. Speaking of grown-ups, this book is about Superman facing a lot of grown-up problems, like all your old friends coming to kill you and your family. And, you know, we've talked a lot about how the Time Trapper stuff, Doomsday, this character has become so important to this Superman story. And I like it. A lot of people I feel like are like, I can't find an access point here. Just go along for the ride. It's a fun character. It's a good use of Superman lore and DC lore for this. The reveal at the end, I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
I love the Omega powered Legion. They are, in this comic, legitimately scary. I was scared of them, and so that's hard to do.
First off, the wink at the end really kind of threw me. I was having a great time up until then, you know, kind of this cool story of Superman and being excited to visit, the old Legion. And, I thought that was great. There was tons of action. It was very fast-paced. And then I got very excited because then they killed off the entire Justice League, which includes Green Arrow. So suck it, Green Arrow, you fucking blow.
Wow. What is wrong with you? I love the sequence where the Legion kills everybody off as well. I thought that was really well done and incredibly tense throughout. I don't know if you guys noticed, but there's a scene where Superman is talking to Ma Kent back in Smallville in his old room. There is a Mighty Crabjoy's poster on the wall, which is straight from Superman. Thought that was very cute that they did that this week in particular. But this is great. To talk specifically about the thing that happens at the end, Superboy Prime is back. And it is a tonal swerve, I think, at the end of the issue that he is Deadpooling out and breaking the fourth wall. But I imagine this is Joshua Williamson and probably by extension Scott Snyder, who is helping architect this, being like, this is a big deal. This is just not just another event. Like, you know, when Superboy Prime shows up, shit's about to go down. And that's exactly what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
So good stuff. Amazing Real Spider-Man canary. Number 8 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by John Romita Jr. and Todd Knock. Amazing Spider-Man is in for the fight for his life. against Hellgate, not the area or the online blog, but a giant Ares-looking guy. It doesn't go that well for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Kelly likes to write Spider-Man getting his ass kicked. I feel like we've seen so much of a wrecked Spider-Man. But I'm still on board with this. There's an artist change in the middle of this comic, right, that I found a bit of a shock. But I like what's happening here. I feel like the flashback stuff that Joe Kelly's doing to a young Peter is really interesting in fleshing out Spider-Man in a way that really is humanizing him, making him, like, make mistakes in a way that I feel like we haven't seen before. So that's really cool. Pete, I'm curious. There's some interesting Mary Jane work in here.
Yeah, this was very upsetting.
Don't you
first
think?
First off, fun cover, you know. Got very excited. It's interesting you talk about the change of artist later in the stack. We're going to get to the thing that really kind of freaked me out about that. But not so much bother me in this issue. But I did... It's the MJ and Top Bun guy is just makes me want to barf. But at the end, it seems like Spider-Man's
Top Bun
is dead. So, you know, this amazing run is over. Just like the...
I think the Mary Jane thing was the first sort of gesture toward Mary Jane maybe feeling more connected to Peter than we've seen in a while.
The thing that was confusing to me about that scene is we know Mary Jane is Venom now. So when she sees, like, oh, no, Spider-Man is in trouble across town, why is her first action to tell Paul and Dylan Brock and not turn into Venom and go help Spider-Man? And I think the answer is to not overcomplicate this issue of Amazing Spider-Man. But as somebody who does read both of those comics, a little weird. That's all.
It made it feel like that was going to happen next issue. That scene gets cut out pretty quickly, but I also feel like Spider-Man feels like he's being taken somewhere else in next issue. So, I don't know. The Mary Jane stuff was intriguing to me. I feel like...
They're hinting towards it, and Paul and Mary Jane are definitely on the rocks over in Venom, so I think we are headed towards something. I did want to ask you guys, maybe I'm just reading this entirely wrong, because... First of all, very brutal fight with Hellgate, really well drawn, as always, by John Romita Jr. But all of the dialogue that's happening feels like they're not listening to each other, which I know is a crazy thing to say with Spider-Man and this big villain, Hellgate. But the way that they're writing Hellgate feels like he's not a villain. And if Spider-Man just listened to what he was saying, he'd be like, oh, okay, what do you need help with? And this would all stop.
I think the way I listened to, I heard it in my head is Hellgate's sort of talking to himself. He's a lot of like, this guy sucks. Why do I have to learn from him? So I feel like, and Peter's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Stop trying to kill me. I agree with you. They're not, Hellgate's ignoring Spider-Man because he's being annoying, and Hellgate is annoyed at this boss character that he's talking to also. So
it feels like there's a twist coming that all of these fights could have been avoided if they just stopped and talked to each other. But whatever, I guess we'll see.
That's true in literally everything.
Yeah.
Alex,
as I always say, the voice said kill number one from Image Comics, written by Cy Spurrier, art by Vanessa Del Rey. This is set deep in the woods where Park Ranger, I want to say, who is very pregnant, is trying to deal with a bunch of folks that are trying to push her in different directions, leading to a climactic, devastating thing that happens that sends things spiraling out of control. Justin, I think you were excited about this one, so take it.
Yes, I really enjoyed this. I really like the Vanessa Del Rey art is different than a lot of other art out there. I really liked the way it really brought you into the environment. This is like a hot, very rural area. We're out in it. This park ranger character, the story kept me guessing. I didn't know what was happening. We get the twist that you mentioned that I don't want to spoil because it caught me off guard in a great way. And I just like these characters. This feels very original and fresh to me. So it really, really took me in.
Yeah, this is an intense story. It's a little too intense for me when there is someone who's pregnant. I have a hard time just because I'm like, oh, God, she shouldn't be doing this. Oh, no. Oh, why? Oh, This poor baby. So yeah, it's intense. There's a lot going on. It's amazing art. I love all the twists and turns. And this is, very kind of cool reveal at the end. But the layer of pregnancy on top of all this tension is just, it's a lot for me.
What if she had the baby in her hands?
It'd be a little bit better with the drinking and the other smoking and stuff like that. But no, not in the hands. It wouldn't. Yeah. So I don't know, man.
I just wanted to add on real quick about Vanessa Del Rey's art. She's been doing this book with Brian Azzarello that I'm blanking on the name of over at Boom Studios.
Yes.
This is
the metal.
Yes. This is much less abstract than that, which I was like, it felt more controlled and a little more grounded, which I appreciated. It was a little easier to follow the action in this book than the other book. But I agree. Good stuff.
That's called The Creeping Below.
Creeping Below. There we go. Batman 161 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Loeb, art by Jim Lee. In this issue, Hattush continues as Batman fights Batgirl and a bunch of other people fight a bunch of other people, and some stuff is going down and everybody's very mad at Batman because he helped the Joker, something that he does on a regular basis, like they teamed up just a little while ago, but it's pretty shocking and bad and really breaking the Bat family here. And oh boy, nothing is ever going to be the same.
Oh, come on, man. You don't have to say it all like that. This is exciting Batman stuff here. First off, I just want to take a moment and enjoy the Jim Lee cover. I don't know, man. Something about Jim Lee and Batman brings me back to a magical time. So
it was because the way he drew it before.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Probably.
Yeah,
that's probably what's bringing you. That's something you're talking about.
Can I suggest something, Pete? I've been thinking about this a lot with the whole nostalgia bath, this bringing you back to a magical time. Would it be worth reflecting on what it is about your life right now that's not working instead of looking back to a time when it was better?
Hey, I already did therapy today. I don't need more.
This is free, though. This is free.
Yeah, that's what they all say. It's not free. How dare you? You're treading on my soul, and that's a cost to me. Cool, man. Yeah, life's hard. You know, things are better when you're little. I don't know what to tell you, man, but get out of my head.
All I'm saying is think about how you can take that joy you felt when you were little and bring it to the present day. How can you bring it forward?
Go fuck your bucket with that joy, all right?
I will be invoicing both of you for our hour here.
Great. Great. Yeah, I'll add it to the list. First off, crazy stuff going down in this. You hate to see teammates fight, which maybe people can relate to on this episode. But, just some badass stuff. Also, some weird stuff. I was complimenting Jim Lee's art. And then there's this moment where Robin's like, yeah, I'm going to call in all these bats, and they're birds. And I'm just like, well, what is happening?
Well, he's
because
Robin.
These bats look like birds. Yeah, and he's Robin, but he's calling them bats. And I'm just like, all right, well, I don't know if someone didn't relay Jim Lee that, hey.
No, they have a whole conversation about that afterwards where Batman's like, wow, you turned them into birds. And he's like, sure did.
Oh, cool. All right.
I improved on the design.
Oh, awesome. Anyways.
Sorry.
When Batman decks Bane, I said, oh, shit, out loud and lost my mind. And I had a lot of fun with that moment. And the fact that Alfred got a little revenge there made me so happy. But otherwise, just seeing Batman fight Batgirl is heartbreaking.
I hope Alfred got to make a tiny sandwich in his grave.
Yeah,
for that moment.
A little cucumber sandwich.
I will say the page of Batman punching Bane was cool. Yeah, it definitely. I was hyped for that. But let me also say, when I was reading the comics in the stack, and I was like, Batman 161, and I saw the Hattush on the cover, I was like, oh, man. I thought it was going to be a regular Batman comic. Because this story is just like, it's just dumb. Like, the chess metaphor at the top, I was like, get out of here with this. We've seen this thousands of times. How are you doing a, like, haha, the pawn is taken? I'm like, get the fuck out of here with that. Shocking writing. The characters feel like sketches. They don't feel like there's that much depth to them. I just wish this was charting a different path. Everyone's behaving strangely. The Batgirl fight, I was like, this is not them. It doesn't feel. And then we see the Bat family about to fight them, and suddenly for some reason the Riddler's there in a weird outfit.
Riddle me this.
Yeah.
There was a sale at Lowe's, and I got some sweet clothes.
What are you doing? What is that?
He's spitting bars. Let's go.
I don't know that that's a riddle, but I did like it.
I will say I do buy a lot of my clothes at Lowe's.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I liked Pete saying the Lowe's clothes rhyme better than this entire issue of Batman.
Oh, Hattouche.
Hattouche.
What if everything you've been taught about happiness is wrong? We chase careers, approval, more stuff, hoping it'll finally make us feel fulfilled, but it never sticks. What if happiness isn't out there, but already inside you, just waiting to be unlocked? Discover the book, The Happiness Experiment. Every person has a unique happiness type, and when you understand yours, everything shifts. You'll stop chasing and start creating joy on your own terms. Discover your happiness type with a free happiness type assessment. Go to myhappinesstype.com. That's myhappinesstype.com. It takes just a minute and it might change your life. Then grab your copy of The Happiness Experiment at Books A Million. This isn't just a book. It's a practical framework, a journey inward. It's a tool to help you reconnect with the happiness that's been waiting inside you all along. Pick up The Happiness Experiment and start your happiness experiment today.
Storm number 10 from Marvel, written by Murawa Ayodele, art by Lucas Wernick. This is the kickoff of Thunder War, and man, is this wild. I don't even know how to describe what goes on in this book.
Shit goes down.
So many things happen here. This is endless wild imagination in one issue. It is utterly insane, and I say that complimentarily.
But the thing about this book is it is wildly imaginative, and there's so much happening on it. It's so vivacious, but it's still so composed. It's just amazing to me for a comic that, you know, these aren't names that we've seen working in the industry for 10 years. And this comic feels so, like, complete and lively. It's just – it's such a breath of fresh air every time I pick it up. I love what's happening in it. It's wild. The villains are cool. They're just hanging out in a tree for some reason in this issue. It's just everything's great about this book.
Yeah, I agree. It's a ton of fun. A lot goes down in this issue. Yeah, we see characters that are kind of probably dusted off to kind of bring into here, but very well used and very interesting. It's kind of weird, though, that she's surfing like the Silver Surfer on the cover.
Yeah, I don't know if that exactly connects to this, but I will say one thing that is great about this book is this has been an amazing reclamation project for Maggot,
who is a
ridiculously fun character, and there is such a good scene in this book. Several good scenes, but one scene in particular that I'm thinking about where
Maggot suddenly... Storm roasting Manifold is so funny.
Yes, yeah. It's great. This is great. I don't know if I can recommend jumping in with this issue, but maybe you should, because we talk a lot about,
it's only
like
issue 10.
Well, we talk a lot about that idea of when you were a kid, when you'd go and be like, oh, what's this random issue of X-Men? And be like, whoa, my mind's blown. This is the sort of thing that you'd hand to somebody and be like, you're not going to know what's going on, but you're going to want to know more. So yeah. Great stuff. Void Rivals, number 21 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Connor Hughes. In this issue, a large man in a metal suit and another large man in a metal suit are fighting, and there's a small boy there. And meanwhile, the Void Rivals are no longer fighting, but they are exchanging hands. Oh, and the Skuxoids are fighting.
Which shouts to Alex. I'm sure you like that. Large men in metal suits and large metal suits that transform into cars. Very different here. And they're different, doing different things, like sometimes standing and sometimes fighting.
Yeah, all their bullshit aside, this is very enjoyable. A lot of big battles kind of brewing and things going down in this issue. I've been enjoying this from the first ish till now, and I cannot wait to see what's going to happen next. Great art, great team on this.
I want to pause here and try to figure out why isn't working. for me, my speaking selfishly, and maybe Alex. And Pete, maybe you can make a case on why it is. Because there's so many interesting elements here. I like the two warring worlds, the two warriors that come together and develop a friendship. The Skuggzoid cutaways are interesting. Like, even the Transformers, I liked the cut. Like, they're hanging out. Like, revealing them is, like, fun. It was such a surprising thing. But for some reason, these things are coming together, and it just feels like every puzzle piece is not fitting for me. Or, like, we're not getting into any... I don't know what character I ride with in this. Or, like, any emotional depth. Or something. There's something missing.
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head, is that everything is given equal weight. We should be focusing on the title characters, these two void rivals who are from opposite houses. It should be a Romeo and Juliet thing. But instead, particularly in an issue like this, void rivals, Transformers, big metal guys, and Skuggzoids fighting, and then eventually one with a beard being like, I'm the ultimate Skuggzoid, are all given like the same amount of dramatic heft with not... a lot of emotion there, because also everybody is very casual about everything, including like the small boy.
Maybe that's it.
Who's like, oh, two big robots. Probably should get out of the way of this. Oh, one of them won? Wasn't the one I was expecting. Okay.
I think you nailed it.
I do think there's something interesting, too, because if you aren't someone who's like me, is just happy to see them, there isn't enough story for you to kind of get and as excited as I am, or to get involved. You know what I mean? Because the fact I'm like, oh, shit, I remember that Transformer. I used to have that one. And, oh, my God, that guy. So if you haven't seen Transformer, the animated movie, in a while, you know, they're pulling from that on a regular basis, and it's pretty amazing. So if you kind of don't have those touch points, these things don't care to you. So you don't care about them, so there isn't that kind of in. You're looking for your in, and because it's all over, you don't have it.
That could be. But I also think the casual nature, it's a little too, everyone's a little too cool for school when we really want them to be, like, very stressed out about what's going on around high stakes.
Like, oh, I can't believe it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about book where everybody is stretched out. Absolute Martian Manhunter number 5 from DC Comics, written by Dennis Camp, art by Javier Rodriguez. In this issue, it is night in the city, and everybody is being corrupted by a white Martian, and everything is starting to go horribly, horribly wrong as our detective and his Martian parasite buddy, maybe himself, we don't totally know, are trying to track down the source of this, leading... to a very surprising last page that blows the Absolute Universe wide open in a big way. Another fantastic, gorgeously drawn issue of this book.
Yeah, I mean, these covers should just be collected and studied and marveled for their achievements, because the artistry and what's happening is just off the page. This is just, I love paging through this. I love going back to this when I'm having a bad day or whatever. Just looking at this comic makes me happy. This is really impressive art. I've read a ton of DC comics and have never seen anything like this. It's really an achievement of artistry with what they're doing in this comic, and using the panels and the coloring and everything is just, it's next level, and it's really bringing such a kind of vibe to this comic and such an aura that it's just making everything that much more kind of on. So I just can't get over how beautiful and amazing this is, but there's a lot that goes down, and there's a scary cliffhanger at the end, and holy shit, I can't believe everything that's happening. But story-wise, this is also really impressive to kind of have this kind of access to Martian Manhunter.
Ooh, great access. VIP. I feel like, you know, this comic's going to be, this title's going to be nominated for awards for sure.
It better.
And I honestly think this issue might be the issue that gets put up for the bigger Eisner Awards, because it's pushing the larger DC story forward. It's pushing the Martian Manhunter story forward. But it's also just telling an interesting story about light and darkness and how we act as people, doing it in a highly visual format. This is like, you could pick up this as a standalone issue and just enjoy the shit out of it. Like Pete was saying, it can literally pick your mood up because of the lush universe you're just getting to explore.
Runaways, number two from Marvel, written by Rainbow Rowell, art by Elena Casagrande and Roberta Ingranata. In this issue, Chase Stein is back. That's really complicating things for the team of Runaways, who are trying to run away from Dr. Doom, who is after their friend Doombot. How'd you feel about this issue?
I love hanging out with these characters again. And, like, their dramas, for whatever reason, if it's the Runaways themselves or Rainbow's work on it, like, I've just caught up in their interpersonal drama all the time with these characters. And it's really good. It just works. The Chase, Gert, Victor budding love triangle here is awesome. These characters are so likable, even Doombot, as we know him, as C-53, shouts to Mission to Zix. I wonder if that's where they pulled the name from for this, because that's the name of a character on that, and is also a droid, so that's crazy. But this comic, very good.
Yeah, I agree. This is really great. It reminds me of the original kind of Runaways run that got so popular. You know, we've got characters that we like and we're rooting for, and it's really awesome. You know, Chase is back, and, you know, their Doombot gets to stay for a little bit. So some wins here. It's very exciting stuff. Great art, great story. It's very enjoyable.
Feral, number 15 from Image Comics, written by Tony Fleece, art by Trish Forstner and Toad Rodriguez. Our cats have managed to escape from the rabid cats outside inside of a pet store, but it's maybe even worse inside, as the pet store is ruled by a series of rules, and also they eat their young.
Ah, you had to say it. You had to say it. You got to be Tony Fleece and kidding me with this. They eat the babies, not the babies, Tony. Come on, bro. Every time I mean,
it's the best. You're going to eat it. You want the veal.
Right.
Oh, what?
It's soft. It's soft.
Yeah. Supple.
You're telling me, okay, end of the world, zombie situation since we're humans.
No consequences.
You're inside of a nursery in a hospital. You're getting pretty hungry. What do you do, Pete?
I'm not going to eat a baby, bro.
What if the baby looks so up
can
at
we
you?
Can we clip that real quick? Can we just clip out that? That's a keeper.
Yeah. You know, I'm in too deep for this story to walk away, because I really want these goddamn cats to make it out of this fucking nightmare apocalypse zombie cats situation. So I'm in too deep. But, man, this is just every time I think they got a break, it's worse than I can ever imagine. And it's they Disneyed the art of this. So it's like your childhood. You're like, oh, man, I love this art. It makes me feel like I'm watching 101 Dalmatians or something. Just really great art, and makes you feel friendly and good inside. And then they just fucking they stick you and they twist the knife, and they're just like, oh, yeah, you having fun?
Here's the thing, though. Yeah. 101 Dalmatians, you don't think they ate one of them?
That's like a movie built around eating dogs, by the way. killing them.
Yeah.
And making them into stuff.
And then they have the meat left, so they eat the meat. They eat the babies.
You can stop have a nibble. Eating babies, Alex.
Yeah. You don't want to throw away all that dog meat. You know? It's wasteful.
Right. Yeah, come on.
Come on. Yeah, and, like, we can get into our favorite recipes, our favorite breeds to cook and prepare.
Come on, dude.
But I think the larger issue to talk about is how these cats be fucking, Pete. they're puffing that fluff out here. There's a lot of cat sexual energy in this comic right now. Shouts to that.
One cat gets busted. He's like, you know.
Yeah, dude, you're stepping out. You're literally being a cat. That cat's being a bit of a dog. You know?
Horrifying book. Really well done. Before we move on, I just want to mention, Pete, where do you think baby back ribs come from?
Oh, come on, dude. That's not true.
I mean, think about it.
Nope.
They're called that.
I'm not going to.
They're called that. They're literally called that.
It's not what they're
about. Ask your server next time you're at Chili's or wherever.
I will.
Regularly.
Pizza rag at Chili's. And you know that commercial works for them every time.
my favorite waiter.
I knew it.
Great. Really ran with it on that one.
Justice League Unlimited, number 9 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid. Art, once again, by Dan Mora. This is a epilogue to We Are Yesterday, as the Justice League deals with the fact that Gorilla Grodd has helped them mess up time. There's a bunch of time-lost heroes going on, and some further teases for what's coming up in the DC Universe. I think we were a little mixed on the We Are Yesterday crossover, but how did you feel about this epilogue?
I like this epilogue. Okay. I like the way they're bringing, Mark Waid's bringing in all these random characters. This is like, it's funny that we're getting this alongside the new history of the DC Universe, because we get so many little panels here where they just cut to an interesting sort of lost character, like the Batman who replaced Bruce after his back was broken. All Azrael. The Supergirls. Azrael, yeah. We get just so many little cutaways, which are fun. And the return of the two T-Spheres fighting to bring back our lost
guy. Mr. Terrific.
Really, yeah. Mr. Terrific. Right. Very topical. I should definitely know that. Yeah. It was really cool. Like, I think this comic is great, even though there's truly so much going on in it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree. This is a blast, epic looking kind of cover here. I'm a little over the time trapper keeper thing, but other than that, I thought this was like a ton of action, a lot of cool stuff happening. Great art. This is fun. It seems like they're having fun with this, and the kind of Red Hood, all the powers, Batman, Green Lantern thing guy is interesting.
We talk a lot about last page reveals, and it's usually like turn the page, surprising characters there, or a great image. The last just line that Batman says at the end of this comic is so good. It's just, it makes me want to just like rip it open. I want to time trap myself into the next issue immediately.
Whoa.
Gwenpool, number 3 from Marvel, written by Kevin Scott, art by Stefano Nessi. Last issue, Gwenpool was killed, so Spider-Man, Kate Bishop, and Jeff the Landshark have headed to her funeral, but also headed to her funeral is the resurrected Gwen Stacy, who is also a Weapon X now. But Gwenpool isn't totally dead. She's actually a ghost who is able to possess people, and is using that to fight back against Gwen Stacy. What is going on in this book?
Well, there's a lot going on, but I do think it's fun. There's a lot of funny lines in here. I like the murder Barbie line. I thought that was fun. Jordan D. White gets a shout out in this book, which I enjoyed. Twist at the end. And Alex, I'm surprised you're a ghost. I'm surprised you didn't like this more.
I finally saw myself on screen. What are you thinking about this, Justin?
I mean, it's moving through a lot of ideas quickly, and it's like, I should say, I like this. The art is nice in this. It's sort of jumping the line between some classic superhero style art. And then we get a moment where Gwenpool's ghost goes into Peter Parker, and we get some nice retro art that I really liked in here. I like the speed at which this is moving. It's just it's going, it's breaking the fourth wall. It's diving into a Hawkeye, and like, there's just a, it's just hard to hold my hands around the whole story as it's happening.
Well, 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 look who came around. At the first issue, I remember I said, I don't understand what they're trying to aim towards here. And you were like, well, hold on, that's what the rest of the series is for. And then after the second issue, it was like, I still don't know what the point of this is in terms of what we're saying about Gwenpool or Gwen Stacy or even Spider-Man or anything like that. And you're like, hold on, they'll get to it. Well, we're 3 issues in, and you finally agree with me, Justin.
Hoisted on my own petard once again.
I got you good just now.
God, I'm really good. This one's really going to smart. Really going to sting. That and all the cat sex from that comic. Those are the 2 things I'm really going to take home with me.
The Department of Truth, number 32 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Letizia Catanici. This is an arc focusing on internet memes, specifically, wait, what is it, the man with the hat? Is that? That's not the man with
the hat. That's the one in the comic.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Slenderman.
Slenderman. But yeah, no, the man with the hat, what's it actually called? Because the man with the hat is from Curious George, and that's not what we're talking about here.
No, I think this is based on Slenderman.
Yeah.
In the comic, it's called the Hat Man.
Hatman, not the man with the hat. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, killer internet meme.
What do you think it's going to be a Curious George reveal, Alex?
Oh, man, probably. That would have been fun.
The ultimate meme?
Yeah. Does he have a yellow hat? They haven't established yet, right?
It's in shadow. We may never know. Okay. It's funny. Do you think Curious George, everyone has a hat these days?
It's true. Do you think Curious George would have worked the same if instead of the man with the yellow hat, it was Slender Man?
No, that's the kind of story I want. That's some absolute energy. Pete, what did you think of this? Are you familiar with Slender Man?
This is your cup of tea. You love the Department of Truth, so I'm patiently waiting for you to talk about this comic. I think this shit is scary as fuck, but I'm excited for what's to come. The birds aren't real conspiracy theory.
It's very fun in the back.
Yeah.
James Tynion's comics are just great at back matter, really taking the themes they're working with and putting them into a different story or idea. What I think is remarkable about this is it feels like a completely different comic. Mm-hmm. We're getting a little bit. It's taking the idea of Department of Truth that we create the reality that we live in, and if enough people believe in something, it becomes literally real in the world around us. Really smart, especially in this day and age where there's so many fake things that we're exposed to and many people believe in them. This feels like it feels like a separate title that's going in a different direction. We get a little bit of shades of our characters that we've seen throughout the series. So I don't know how this will fold into the larger story, because it's such a modern version of their premise. But I'm along for this ride, top to bottom. Like, it's a great comic. I like the new characters. I like the old characters.
It's an impressive artistic kind of achievement. It's very art forward, the kind of tone that it sets with this Department of Truth. And also, it's been going for a while, so they keep kind of cranking out these ideas and conspiracy theories and other things. It's really impressive what they've been able to do on this run.
I really like this arc a lot, and I particularly like it because of Letizia Cattanici's art, which has been so good over on Something is Killing the Children and House of Slaughter, specifically House of Slaughter, and that whole part of the universe. Great stuff. Good title. Absolute Wonder Woman number 10 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Hayden Sherman. Wonder Woman is still trapped in a maze and trying to get folks out. She is being attacked by a evil sorceress who is leading a bunch of mermen. And as bad as things get, this issue is still really funny at points, which I appreciate.
And emotional, deeply heartfelt as well.
Yeah.
Pete, your emotions?
That's all we had to say.
Great.
This is your thing, Pete. This is right, you talk well, about this you. Book.
I'm just waiting for my.
I just want you to have the chance to really talk about it, because of how much you love the art and the writing in this comic, the characters, and the sort of the new darker take on the Wonder Woman origin. So really, looking forward to hearing your take.
All right.
Anytime you're ready to do it. But cool. Then look at this first cover. Let me say before you do, look at this cover, though.
No! You took away my cover. You fucker. You left me nothing. another amazing issue. Love the art. Love the action. Fun being inside Wonder Woman's head, as Justin says, brain me. And we get a flashback, which is just very touching. Great. I'm loving all we are learning about Wonder Woman and, you know, how great she is. So just really, really love this badass story. Kelly Thompson is doing an amazing job, and I get excited every issue and every issue they deliver.
Brain me, because I'm in here with Wonder Woman.
You
I
love
do think
inside their head.
I do. That's why I say my patented catchphrase, buy the T-shirt. Now, brain me. What they've done with Absolute Wonder Woman is they've made the most heroic character, I think, in comics right
yes.
now.
Yes.
She is the most, like, pure of heart, like, does it
That's
for...
That's what they talk about in the issue.
Does it for the right reasons. We have all these gods being like, yo, this something's crazy about this kid. She's too good, but she's... You're just rooting for her so hard in every issue, and it's just such an accomplishment. And the art matches that. It's fantastic.
Agreed. Yeah.
The Uncanny X-Men number 18 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by Luciano Vecchio. In this issue, the X-Men go to a Friendship Day celebration in their honor in the, I was going to say the local town, but it's New Orleans, right?
New Orleans. So, yes.
New Orleans, the local town. And then in the middle, of course, some stuff goes down and they end up saving people. And that's the issue, folks.
It's local for stray bullies. Yeah. First off, this is a real emotional roller coaster for me because I hated the cover because I was like, why does Wolverine look like he's going to barf? Like, what's up with that?
He doesn't like Ferris wheels.
I was all upset. And then I started reading this and I was like, oh, my God, I'm having such a great time. Yeah, it's great to see people working together and getting along. So I very much enjoyed this, even though I had a little bit of a slow start and then built up to the action. But man, by the end of it, I was having a great time.
I like the way that they've been able to combine our young foursome and then the main team, the sort of outsiders and our Uncanny X-Men team, and sort of share focus a little bit. We had a big arc that just wrapped up, focusing on the younger four characters. So it's nice to have the shift over to Rogue, Gambit, and all of them. And then the message was just really sweet. By the end, I got caught up in the emotions. When I always say, heart me. When I get caught up in the feelings. So I was definitely there with it. And great Nightcrawler scene. Yeah. Scenes, I think, here. Right?
I love a Nightcrawler romance, so I am very into that. That's really working very well. Also, great, really well-drawn moment from Luciano Vecchio of the team finally getting into costumes again, which we haven't seen for a very long time, and clearly they were holding back for this, but it's very nice. It's iconic. And I also really enjoyed this issue. I do have one little quibble about this.
Here we go.
It's Wolverine, I love the idea not liking Ferris wheels.
Quibble me quick.
I love going to Lowe's for the clothes. I love them going to this carnival. It's weird to me that the main thing that they need to deal with is somewhere else because they're at this carnival. They're like, oh no, the school is on fire. Let's leave this carnival and go to an entirely different location and deal with the problem there versus things going wrong at the carnival and them having to deal with it.
It was a strange misdirect because I think we get Wolverine sort of being like something bad's going to happen here. And he goes to fight the guy that grew up with Gambit and sort of his little arch enemy who was actually helping them there. So I think it's a red herring. And then they all see fire in the distance and have to run and do it. So, yeah, it was a little strange. But maybe there was like a first responder idea that they were going with there where they had to go and get to the children's hospital and stop it from burning down. But everyone got to be just a great hero in this comic.
Lost Fantasy, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Kurt Pyers, art by Luca Casalanguida. We are following Final Fantasy meets a guy with a lightsaber fighting monsters throughout town as well as law enforcement. This book is beautiful to look at and absolutely wild.
Great.
Yeah, it's I don't quite like the Lost Fantasy aspect. I'm like, what does this mean? Because I like the story. I just don't quite see the titling is getting in my way for some reason because it feels so different from that. I don't know. Maybe that's a quibble. Quibble me this.
I mean, there's nothing like starting with an epic sword fight scene. So that got me right away. Tons of action, twists and turns, corrupt cops, evil worms. This is just awesome. I love the pace.
You are rhyming out of control today.
And loved all the action. So
poetry class. You've been hanging out. Really, you've been taking off. You've been watching Eminem's Masterclass, right? And that's really getting you into that 8 Mile era shit, right, dude? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mom's Spaghetti.
Yeah.
New History of the DC Universe, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Michael Allred and Brad Walker. We are continuing our walk through the revised and collated version of the History of the DC Universe. Justin, you loved the last one.
Yeah, Justin.
How'd you feel about this?
I love information, and we just get so much here. It's great information, a lot of splash pages featuring characters together that you wouldn't normally see hanging out, like Lobo, who I think most people know as Space Wolverine, hanging out with Geo-Force, the Omega Men, and Vigilante. So, like, this is almost, we were talking a bit about in the Patreon Discord about the good and bad things of the swimsuit issues. And this has swimsuit issue energy, where it's like a lot of like just basic information about these characters put together in a nice, nice package to look at.
You love a tight package. Yeah, so I think, first off, awesome cover. I mean, Chris Samnee killing it. That's very cool. I was a little distracted because they switch artists back and forth in between different. I almost wanted them to kind of go half and half, or like, okay, or give me the villains of one artist. And the, just because the back and forth was pulling me out of it, you know. Allred's art is so cool, but it's so different. You know what I mean? It's a different tone. Yeah. So it just kind of pulls me out a little bit, which I don't like because it's amazing art. But it just, I don't know, it collides for me a little bit in this, and I was having some trouble. But
it's interesting.
Yeah, you learn stuff if you're looking for like great art and little bits of information about heroes and villains. This is your jam.
Yeah, either follow the Teen Titans on Instagram or buy this comic.
Either way.
The Season's number 6 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Paul Azaceta. And this issue's Summer Seasons is trying to get away from... Spring Seasons is trying to get away from an evil carnival who is after her and has gotten her sisters and parents. And is she going to escape? I guess we'll find out by the end of this issue. Justin, I know you were pretty hyped about this, so take it away.
I've said it many times. I just love the art in this comic. Pie Ball as a Seda is so nice, and Rick Remender is really leaning into this. Is such a summertime book. The colors are excellent, bringing in like a lot of bright colors. Everything is nice and sunny, even though we're getting into just a horrifying underbelly here. This issue really struck me, the Alice in Wonderland-ness of it, which I liked that journey. I like the... Rick Remender's always saying something larger. All the characters in this comic are struggling with their insecurities until they get drawn into a mirror, a hand mirror that gives them everything they want, as a probably a direct metaphor for the cell phones that we hold up to our faces most of the day, is what I was getting from it. But wonderful, fantastical story. One of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, beautiful cover. This is just creepy, tripped out, but also magical, and there's a ton of hope in there, which is great. But man, the panels on this, the artistic choices, just what an experience just reading this comic. It really sucks you into this world in such a impressive, creative way. Just really, really worth it for the art alone. I mean, the story's amazing, though. But man, just... next level, the art and the artistry and the characters. It's so creepy and so wild and so bright. And like we were talking about earlier, this juxtaposition of this kind of bright, magical world and the darkness underneath is such an interesting 1-2 punch that keeps me coming back for more. I cannot wait to read the next issue. Every issue of this has just been absolutely fantastic.
Look Into My Eyes, number 1 from Mad Cave Studios by Rubin. This takes place in a world with a new social media app that is really messing things up for some people in the local school.
Some teens.
I'm trying to look into your eyes. You make it tough.
Oh. Is that better? How's that? Good?
I've never seen you bulge your eyes like that. That was creepy.
Oh, yeah. I can, like, bulge them straight out. It's pretty gross.
Oh, my God.
It's wild.
And that's my review of the book.
You're like Large Marge.
This reminded me a bit of the Maria Lovett comic that I really liked.
100%, and it's crazy because she did, I believe, a variant cover for this.
Variant cover that is actually really nice. But that was called Crave, I want to say.
Yeah.
But this comic is hard to know exactly what's happening. It's moving so fast, and it's like very much like, hey, why, look over here, that I think we lose touch of what the thread is, because it has the similar dread that Crave had, but it's just there's so much else going on here.
I think the problem is the characters, because it feels like you're cutting in the middle of something where it's like, you know these guys, you've met them before, you know all these people, you hang out with them at high school. Okay, let's go. They're having this big problem. What's the problem? We'll tell you about it later. So yeah. It's like dropping in the middle of a conversation with a bunch of people that you have never met before in your entire life. But art-wise, I thought this was really interesting. It's very really dense. It's very into social media, so it's packed in every page, but still the action is clear at the same time, which I think is a hard balance to strike. So from that part, it's successful, but I agree with you, it is hard to hold on to the narrative.
Yeah, Once it got past the hype of the first half, once it got past the hype of the first half of the comic and into, like, we get some horror looks and pages in the back half, I thought it settled a little bit and maybe it was going to get somewhere. Sorry, Pete.
No, it's I think the crazy cool cover, unbelievable art, kind of high school mean girls situation with some dark horror elements sprinkled in. I don't know what's going on, but I want to read more just because the art has pulled me in and the kind of perspective of the panels. But if someone's like, hey, what's this about? I would just say, look into my eyes.
Ice Cream Man, number 44 from Image Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martine Morazzo. This issue, as usual, is another horror anthology issue, this time taking the form of a terrifying performance review. Aren't they all?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. What is
Pete,
that?
You have a job?
Yeah, I do.
Have you never had a performance review, Justin?
I don't think I have.
Wow.
What? Is it hard? I mean, I guess I have. It's like an audition.
It's awful. Yeah, it's kind of like an audition, but with an audition, you could get a job. With this, you could lose your job. You know what I mean? Mm. And it's usually someone who doesn't know what they're talking about, giving you a shit ton of advice. Anyways, enough of that. Ice Cream Man, this is issue number 44, and I just want to admire the roller coaster while we're on it. This comic never disappoints. It's fucking creepy. Mm. You have no idea what art angle or what they're going to come at you, but you know they're coming for you. And man alive, I'm so impressed by this. This is really so messed up. There's so much jargon of corporate America and just the title alone, the way they repeat it. It's just... It creeps me out, and it's everything that's wrong with this world with a little hope of what's right. It's really impressive what they're doing here, and 44 issues of like, oh God, what is this going to be? And they're still delivering.
A great, fantastic. I like the way this story landed. I thought it was really cool. And in this comic, it reminds me of George Saunders writing a lot. Especially this issue, I felt like.
Thundercats, Powerpuff Girls, number one from Dynamite, written by Polina Ganichot, art by Coleman Engel. This is picking up on the free Comic Book Day issue that does what the title says, crosses over the two properties. And here they go on a adventure together on Third Earth, I want to say.
Yeah.
Pete, this is your jams.
Yes, I love both Thundercats and Powerpuff Girls, so thank you. This is fun. The Powerpuff Girls go to save Thundercats. Just funny moments, enjoyable story. Kind of great to see them kind of working together, piecing this together. And then it felt like there were shots taken at Furby. I was having a blast with this and thought it was adorable in all the right ways.
I agree with you. Very adorable. And how about all that Thundercat fucking happening in here? Very crazy, right?
It's crazy.
Just, I don't know what's going on in comics these days.
When he held up the Sword of Omens and yelled, Puff the Fluff, that was very surprising.
I felt really seen in that moment. But I will say, just real quick on it, I actually think this was the crossover was really different. They really pushed it. It could have been something that isn't that just like was a fun little lark. But I think they got into some interesting things. There's this sort of they have to unlock the Thundercats who have been sort of poisoned by the thing. I really like stuff like that. It reminds me of the He-Man Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover that I believe Tim Seeley did. That I thought batted way above its average for like just telling a really in-depth story when it was a book that probably didn't need to. And this does the same thing.
Sleep, number three Image Comics by Xander Cannon. This is focusing on a guy who probably turns into a giant wolf monster every time he goes to sleep, but we're only following when he is awake between those points and seeing the destruction that he has left around him. Man, this book has built bigger and bigger and in a more tense and upsetting way every single issue. Love the art here, which is very cartoony and mostly black and white with splashes of red throughout. This issue, our character starts to panic, and I am terrified to see what happens next. Pete, you had a question, I believe?
Yes, I have a question. So every issue is like, oh shit, he's awake. And it's, you know, if he is the werewolf or the monster he's turning into, like, what does he do during the day? How does he deal, right? So my question to you guys is, like, how many more issues can we keep this up before, you know, we got to see it? You know what I mean? Like, it's got to happen. And maybe by the end of this issue, that's the last time. But I was like, all right, we can't keep, like, I need answers. Like, this
is stressing you out.
Yeah, it's getting. But the, like you said, Alex, the art is unbelievable, and the use of red as kind of this interesting storyteller is just fantastic choice.
So let me get this straight, Pete. Are you trying to say brain me? You try to say you want to get in his head a little bit.
I would never take your... I mean, that's the thing. We're in his head, but it doesn't matter because he's not the monster. We won't get that answer in his head. You know, we got to see when he's asleep.
We truly, if for our own personal brands, we cannot take each other's catchphrases. But I do think this comic is super tight bananas. A lot of twists and turns. Great cover. We have our fun, but we got to say real stuff. An anxiety story about werewolf, being a werewolf, I haven't seen before, I don't think. And this really, really does it.
And yeah, I want to contradict what Pete said. I don't ever want to see the wolf. I think it's much tenser.
Really? I'm with you, Alex.
Yeah.
I think we'll get a last page of last issue review.
Maybe. Ooh, Tex Arcana, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Christopher Monfette, art by Miguel Martos. This is about a supernatural investigator traveling through mid-America and stopping supernatural beings, but in a very casual way, even though they're pretty awful. Period.
Yeah.
I'm done now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this is some tripped out evil shit. Amazing art. Gross as hell. This is a creepy ass story. My mind was blown. And this comic, I haven't been right since.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
This was it? This was the dividing line?
This is it. Yeah. This was what did it.
Huh. Finally got him.
And you were fine before.
Well, I mean, that's up for debate, but, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even say we have to debate too much. I think we can all agree. Nope. But for this comic, the art reminded me of, who's the artist that did Crossed back in the...
Oh, yeah. Juan Jose Rip.
Maybe that's, there's a great sort of horrifying moment that happens in the...
When they're jerking off on the bullets is what you're thinking of, right?
Yes. I can't believe they were fucking those bullets. It's crazy. No, I was talking about when the monster, the dead, the combined corpses that also had antlers jammed up through the bottom of the guy's chin and came out above his nose. That reminded me of Crossed. But I do like the way this comic has a funny tone of like, these guys like, another fucking day on the job. And it's like him stopping a poisoned town from like consuming itself. So I think that's working. I like it. And I like that it's really focusing in, though, on this very particular feud rather than it being a story of the week kind of a thing.
Exquisite Corpses, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Pornsack Pichichot with Jamestown IV, art by Valentin Delandro with Michael Walsh. We are following a small town which is beset by insane serial killers, all part of a contest by the secret cabal that controls, if not America, maybe the entire world. And they are competing to find out who will be in control. The person who controls the serial killer who is left at the end will win. So we're also following the outside. I believe the way that it's breaking down is Jamestown IV and Michael Walsh are doing the rich people outside, and everybody else is doing Exquisite Corpse style, the inside area, what's going on in the town, which I wondered about in the first issue, and I think
yes,
it's clearer.
Yes, you did wonder.
I did. But I get it now, and I think
and
that's
well,
great.
Well, I guess in the third issue, you really learned about it.
I did. Thank you, Justin.
Well, I think you've been hoisted on my petard.
I've been hoisted on your petard?
That's all.
Can you be hoisted on somebody else's petard?
I think you can be, but that's just regular war. That's not something. That's the whole point of war, is that you get hoisted on my petard.
Well, can I just wanted to say I can't believe we had
is
to
it
wait.
A petard? Do you have a petard take? That's what we're
Picard?
Doing right now.
Yeah, but John Pete Picard? Actually said to me the other day that you should never hoist petard at a land war in Russia.
Who guessed?
Did that work? I don't know. Go on, Pete.
Nah, yeah. So I
can't
believe
sound
we'll
like
take it again.
Pete
we'll
said.
Take it
yeah.
again.
I feel personally attacked by this issue, and this was very upsetting. Creepy Pete, who eats babies or hurts babies.
This is the eating babies thing that Alex was really trying to get you on board with.
I was intubating. We were getting around
to it. You made me
it.
Wait till the end of the stack for this. I have to write a letter to these writers and just be like, how dare you? The Creepy Pete character looks way too much like me. And yeah, it was very hard to read this because of this awful character that I am nothing
like. I gotta say, he isn't anything like you, because at no point did you see him with delicious baby gristle coming off of his lips, because he had just eaten a fresh baby straight out of the nursery.
Must be nice to see yourself in comics, Pete. I did find it interesting, because a lot of people are named Pete. You know, right?
Sure.
So, like, it's not necessarily you, but when I saw Chris, the waiter from Chili's 2 in here, I knew it was you. I knew it was our Pete. You are Nurse Pete. I like the horror elements here. I like this whole idea that it's James and other writers sharing the duties on it. I also liked the end when they're like, ha-ha, your guy died. And the old lady from Virginia is like, yo, I just racked up double-dig deaths. Come for me. Yeah, it was a really fun surprise and a great way to have her L turn into a dub.
Geiger, number 16, from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Iman Winkle. In this issue, Geiger is dealing with a man who wrecked the entire world, trying to fix a couple of things in the process. What did we think about this one?
Cool cover. I'm enjoying this still. I got some three-headed dog time, so I was happy about that. Some great
three-headed.
Action. Yeah, three-headed dog?
Just two.
Oh, just two?
The back part is the tail.
Yeah.
Good call. I added, I guess I...
By the way, Pete, stop feeding my dog. You're feeding the wrong... You're feeding the downstairs mouth.
Oh, my bad.
Don't... That's no treats necessary.
And hopefully the robot guy will get fixed. And, so I'm having a blast with this. I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah, me too. I'm enjoying this, too.
I think we ran out of gas.
I have gas, but my gas is focused on just getting my clothes down at Lowe's and all this great Pete. We got some great Pete time tonight. And that's Pete's my Geiger, and I ride with my Geig.
Great. Why don't we wrap up there? If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m.
Sure
on Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Brain me, Pete. Brain me.